Hey everybody, welcome to Two Out the First. It is March 18th, 2024. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thanks for being here. Today we're going to talk a little bit about the Players' Championship, the dominance of the last couple of weeks from Scottie Scheffler, some interesting history being made on the side of Scottie Scheffler, and also Wyndham Clark. We'll talk about that briefly. And then kind of the big news of the day is this meeting that is happening down apparently in Nassau, maybe at Albany Golf Club, maybe in the Bahamas, is my guess, between the PGA Tour Policy Board, its player directors, or the Enterprises Board, I suppose, and Yasser Al-Rumayyan and the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia. So I think we'll start with the players, and we'll get back to the inside baseball stuff on the back half of this. But I feel like for the first time this year, I've been having fun watching golf. Genuinely having fun. And it's because of Scottie Scheffler. And to a degree, Wyndham Clark. And maybe to a degree, Shane Lowry. He's had a couple of good tournaments in a row. Three good tournaments in a row. I think this season has been missing these kinds of quality showdowns between the best players. And it's still not there yet. Because not, you know. I would love it to be Scottie and Rory McIlroy, right? Those are the two most recognizable players. And then you'd probably throw in Jordan Spieth because the public loves Spieth. That would be the best thing to get people maybe back and interested into golf. But the quality of golf the last couple of weeks has been fantastic. It's been a lot of fun. And the quality of fields have been as good as you're going to have them on the PGA Tour currently. And we can talk about how much golf misses John Rahm, or PGA Tour misses John Rahm, and to a degree, lesser degree, Koepka and DJ and those type of players on LIV. We can come back to that. But the quality of golf has been extremely good, and it felt like a big deal. And I think the reason it feels like a big deal is because when Scottie Scheffler plays like the way he has the last couple of weeks, he is the best golfer on the planet, and he's the best golfer on the planet you've seen since Tiger Woods. At his best. And it's frighteningly close. Because the way Scheffler is doing this is not that dissimilar from how Tiger did it. Now, Tiger is better. But what Scheffler does so, so well is an incredible ball striker. And he's a smart thinker around the golf course. He thinks his way around. He has a game plan. He knows what he's trying to do. He sticks with the game plan. And that's thanks to Ted Scott as well, who made one of the best decisions of his life to get on Scottie Scheffler's bag. He's a great caddy, really calming influence, a guy who knows what his role is in making sure his guy plays to the game plan, sticks to the game plan, does what he needs to do correct in the situations that he finds himself, and they're a great team. But Scheffler executes his game plan. You can have a game plan, right? Everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth, as Mike Tyson used to say. But, and that happens a lot in golf. But the thing is, in golf, when you get punched in the mouth, so to speak, it's better to stick with the game plan. It's better to keep going with the jab or, you know, whatever you're trying to accomplish. If you've got a good game plan, you stick with it, even when things go wrong. And Scheffler found himself after Saturday in a position where he was five back. He needed to make a move on Sunday. And he knew if he divided his round into nines and he could play a really good first nine, then maybe the leaders would go somewhat sideways. He might get close to them, and then he could be the best golfer in the world and maybe win the golf tournament. He goes out and shoots 64. Davis Love did that, I think, 21 years ago. It was my first players to just be incredible and win. Ties the biggest comeback in the history of the final round of the Players, five shots. He becomes the first player in the 50-year history of this tournament to win back-to-back, which I think is kind of cool that it happened in the 50th one, 49th and 50th one, of the same champion. That was cool. Dean Beaman hands him the trophy because it's the 50th one. He was the PGA Tour commissioner that had the vision to create this tournament and buy this property and have Pete Dye build the stadium course. That was really cool. Jack Nicklaus there, so that's cool. And he's the first Players' Champion. It all kind of just worked out the way that it was supposed to. And I'm not a believer in coincidences. I'm not, or I am a, I am a believer in coincidence. I'm not a believer in, you know, foretold events or those types of things. But it just kind of worked out really nicely that Scottie Scheffler wound up winning. He played a phenomenal, phenomenal round of golf. And if he putts, like, at this level, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago when he won at Bay Hill, when he putted extremely well. So you don't even have to putt this well. You don't have to putt anything like this to win golf tournaments. You just have to putt better than bad, and you give yourself a good chance to win. And that's what he did. And he was relentless. I mean, 64 is no joke. And then throws in a hole-out eagle to not even have to have the putter in his hand for two of the strokes under par. That's just really hard to beat. It just is. And, I mean, there were probably times throughout the week Scheffler thought he had other opportunities to score. He very easily, had the things gone his way, he could have broken the scoring record for this tournament and going back-to-back. The scoring record is Greg Norman's, by the way, 24 under, 264 from, I think, 30 years ago exactly. And that caliber of golf is just, wow. It's cool. It's fun. It's fun to watch when it's that good. And it's helpful. You know, Bay Hill was a blowout, right? It became a laugher by the end because he was so on his game. This was not that way. To have Wyndham Clark in there, and we'll talk about him again in a second, but he stepped up his game. I mean, he took something positive from the water ball, the chunk 117, still found himself in the thick of it with three holes to go. His eagle putt on 16 was very unfortunate that it didn't roll slightly faster. It would have gone right in the heart. I mean, he had the line. And then on 18, to have the power lip out on the putt that was halfway down the cup to force a playoff, that was, I mean, that's probably going to stick with him for a while. And I genuinely wonder what that will mean for him, because he's been very open about kind of mental health, rage, despair, being upset at things. I hope it doesn't. I mean, I think as a golfer, he is extremely entertaining. He has the kind of game, and I think DJ Piasecki put it best from No Laying Up. He's like the modern Jason Day, where he got a whole lot better in his iron play. They were always kind of long. They're great putters. It was just the iron play that needed to be cleaned up. It's been cleaned up, and now he's having this run. And Scheffler and Clark made some interesting history on the PGA Tour, at least in the modern PGA Tour. There's never been two tournaments in a row where one guy won and another guy finished in second in two tournaments in a row. Like, where Scheffler won, he won two in a row. Clark was second in both. Now, he was T2 at the Players with two other players, right? Harmon and Schauffele. But that's really never happened. That's kind of cool. That's something a little bit different. But to have those guys step up and play really great golf last couple weeks has been fun to watch. It's felt like golf is back. And it's about time. You know, the PGA Tour has kind of had some unfortunate circumstances with several tournaments affected by weather, one shortened by weather, bunch of winners you just didn't expect, or, you know, many people didn't even know their names. It's my job to know their names, but I didn't know a whole lot about Nick Dunlap other than that he was a great college player until he was a 300-to-1 shot and won as an AM. Now, I've watched Matthew Pavon on DP World Tour events and things like that. I knew about Jake Knapp a little bit, but still, a lot of the public didn't know, and maybe still doesn't really know, who those guys are. But they know who Scottie Scheffler is. They know who Wyndham Clark is. They know who Rory McIlroy is. He had a great first round. Didn't finish it off, but had a great first round. They know who Brian Harmon is. He's the reigning Open champion. They know who Xander Schauffele is. They know who Shane Lowry is. They're more connected to Schauffele, I think, to Scheffler than any of them other than Rory. But he's kind of established himself, I think, Scheffler, at this point, as he doesn't win duds. I mean, if you look at his win list, he's won this twice. He's won the API twice. He's won at Phoenix twice, which I understand that's not a permanent signature event, but it always has a great field and it is always well thought of. He's won the match play, obviously won the Masters. He's doing it. I mean, when he wins, he doesn't win lightly. He has won $8.5 million the last 2 weeks. He's won in this tournament $9 million the last 2 years. The guy is just a walking ATM because he's a walking top 10, top 5 machine. And the putter is good enough right now that he can win anywhere at any time. And the next time we're going to see him play is at Augusta National. And he's by far the best golfer in the world by a mile. You can't ask for a whole lot more than that. And he's by far the number one player in the world by a mile. We talked about that a little bit on Twitter, X, whatever, that you don't need a world ranking when Scottie Scheffler plays this well. He's the best player, and it's not close. And I understand that John Rahm's an incredible player. I understand Joaquin Niemann is on a great run and maybe truly finding his own. He's been playing great on LIV. But if you were to put those three guys in a threesome and ask them to go play a 72-hole tournament, I don't even question who would win. It would be Scottie Scheffler 9 out of 10 times. He's that good. And he doesn't have that kind of emotional investment that people have in Tiger. He's just not that outward. It's just not who he is. And there's no need to force it. He's not going to do that. That's not who he's wired to be. He's wired to be a great guy who is very humble, who's very grateful for what he has worked toward and what the sacrifices his family, his parents, his wife have made for him so that he can go and do this for a living. And then when it's done, he goes home and just gets to be Scotty. Doesn't get to be world number one best golfer on the planet, Scottie Scheffler. I thought it was really interesting after the tournament. He said, winning golf tournaments doesn't give me any brownie points at home. The second part's a paraphrase, but basically if I came home and started putting all my trophies all over the house and acting like I'm a big deal, my wife would slap me upside the head and tell me to get over myself, basically. I think that goes a long way in being grounded goes a long way. Greatness can be achieved being grounded. Greatness can also be achieved being out of control and having people around you tell you that you're the best ever and sucking up to you and all that stuff. I think Scheffler has an interesting balance of that in his life because obviously people who watch golf and watch him play and watch him do tremendous things with golf clubs and a golf ball go, you're incredible, you're great, you're special, you're the best golfer we've ever seen since Tiger kind of thing, at least statistically. And at the same time, the people that matter the most are the ones who tell him, "Just that's great, you're wonderful, but you know we got life to live. Let's go do that." And now that Scheffler's going to become a dad, that's coming down the pipe, that things may change again. I mean, he's going to be a dad like that. He's not going to be an absentee. I mean, he will be an absentee in that he's gone 20 to 25 weeks of the year, but his wife comes with him a lot of things. I'm sure their child was after the pregnancy is over and she's ready to come out on the road again. That's probably going to happen. So, I mean, priorities will change a little bit, but I think he's very well prepared to handle that. Having a child can be particularly shocking. It was for me twice over. But it for him, you know, his schedule is a lot different than mine, right, or yours. But I think that he has that support system at home to kind of be prepared for it and to be able to do a good job balancing that and to keep his personal life and his professional life somewhat separate. That he can go be a dad when that comes, be a husband, be a son, be a brother, whatever. And then get inside the ropes. All right, it's game time. Let's go play some golf. So I'm very excited about the future for Scottie Scheffler. I mean, I have been. I continue to be. I know there's a way he can't win the Masters. I mean, there are lots of golfers who have shown signs that they could compete with him for 4 days or 3 or 4 days. But it sure feels like he's going to win another one. And if he doesn't win that one, he's going to win the PGA or something. It's just he's too good right now to not get at least one major this year. It would be... At this point, I know he would probably not say, oh, it's a disappointment if I don't win a major. But I'll say it. If he doesn't win a major this year, I would be disappointed for him. He's on one right now. And I've tweeted this a couple different times, but What if Rory McIlroy saying at RIV on international TV, you know, I really think Scotty should go to a mallet. What if that was what inspired him to go to TaylorMade and say, hey, I want to figure out a putting solution. The Logan Olson, who's been making these putters for the answer style putters, custom putters for a number of players. I think Colin Morikawa is in one. He's in bed with TaylorMade, but for him to go to TaylorMade and say, maybe it's not the, not a, no pun intended, not an answer putter for me anymore. It needs to be some kind of mallet. He went with the Tour X, which is again meant to kind of be more like the style of a blade, but with the look of a mallet, you know, benefits of a blade, the look of a blade, performance of a blade with the benefits of a mallet with MOI and weighting. What if that leads to one of the greatest seasons we've ever seen? It's starting to take that shape, right? I mean, it didn't take very long for the mallet to start doing its job, helping him just enough in putting. It's all confidence over the ball, right? And he's talked about that before, that when he's not confident, he uses his hands too much, tries to guide putts, tries to save bad strokes. But if you're making good strokes, you then can trust your read a little bit more. And great putting is about trust, that when you take it back and you put it through, you don't need to do anything other than what you plan to do before you started taking it back. That makes him extremely dangerous as a player. I think that is tremendous for the game of golf that he feels that kind of confidence right now, because it's really fun to watch. I feel bad for Wyndham Clark. That putt that lipped out in 18 was cruel. I mean, it was halfway down. He hit it too hard. He said he hit a perfect putt, but he hit it too hard. And I think his caddy tried to get him to kind of jam it in there, not to coax it in, because he knew it could slip underneath the hole the way that it moved. And he just got it a little too strong. Maybe you need to play it an inch or two outside, a little bit more on the right, and then hit a little bit softer. But he tried to jam it in there, and man, it went halfway down. I felt bad for him. But he said afterward he kind of hopes these last couple of weeks of second place finishes are leading somewhere. And I think that's a common refrain for people who get close pretty often, and then they just don't win for whatever reason. And they're hoping that getting yourself there, putting yourself there, believing in that process that leads to those kinds of results will lead to a trophy or another trophy. I mean, he's already won this year. And I think there's reason to believe that. I don't want to put him in the company of someone that elite yet, like a Scheffler. But if he continues to do stuff like this, you have no choice. And whatever it is that's turned around for him, kind of getting his mental game right, proving to himself that he can do this with a little bit more positive energy than the negative energy he used to kind of carry around with him on the golf course. And maybe he still does. I mean, negative energy is part of life. But he's established himself as a player that you got to watch, that is interesting and that can win. No offense to Xander Schauffele, but that what happened on Sunday to him was very predictable. That's his career. Putting up good finishes, making good money, getting close, but for whatever reason, when it needs to happen, it doesn't happen. Those bogeys on 14 and 15, they're tough golf holes. Don't get me wrong, but it you knew it was coming. You just knew it was coming. And then for Brian Harman to get another moment in the sun, and he had a really good look at it to get his putt in the hole to get to 20 under and force a playoff. And he went low side. He didn't go high side. He wound up going low, I think, and missed that one. And then winds up making the putt for second place and solid seven-figure check. It's a great week for him. I think he's he likes the tough golf courses. He likes the tough field. So he's played well the last couple of weeks too. Just getting in there at the right time. So it's good. It's golf is in a better place. Now, are the ratings going to be great? I have no idea. They were down 10% on Thursday compared to last year. My guess is there'll be something like that, but maybe people tuned in to watch Scotty Scheffler's comeback. I don't know. I really don't. But we'll see. That'll probably come out tomorrow and get all those numbers together. But once we get them, we'll talk about them, I guess. So let's transition a little bit. We don't have a clean one today. There's a meeting today in Nassau or in the Bahamas, probably at Albany Golf Club. And the private jets are en route now. Tigers is already there. Yasser Al-Rumayyan's already there, apparently. There's going to be a meeting between the PGA Tour Policy Board, its directors, full directors and the public investment fund. And for many of the players, this is the first time they're going to meet Yasser Al-Rumayyan, which to me seems crazy. They have been in this process for 10 months since the June 6th announcement, right? And none of these players that are currently on the board have yet to meet with Al-Rumayyan or maybe anyone from the public investment fund. And I find it extremely strange that there are important people on the negotiating side or the representation side that haven't met each other. If I were going to go buy a house, right, I would probably want to at least meet the people who own the house for 5 minutes. Just kind of get a sense of whether I think they're taking care of their house or trying to bamboozle me or any buyer, you know, stuff like that. At least make that basic effort. And if that is just happening right now, that's pretty crazy, I think. So that this is happening now and that they're talking about the talks are accelerating, that Monahan said, used the term accelerated, 10 months into the process, that it strikes me as the PGA Tour was just trying to wait it out and see if they could figure out the deal with Strategic Sports Group first and then see if they wanted to do the deal with PIF. Or if they can't, then go find investors to kind of fill that gap that they would get from the PIF money. So this seems like an important moment today, but at the same time, it could be just a, hey, you know, we want to get to know you a little bit kind of thing. Peter Malnati talked about it. He doesn't know Yasser Al-Rumayyan from Adam, right? And he also said, well, I also don't really get team golf. I don't really like the concept. I personally don't want it. I don't think it'll fit into our schedule. The FedEx Cup schedule, it would be a fall thing, but I want to hear him out. So Rory McIlroy, who was on the board, is no longer and seems to have a different stance about the Saudis than his peers. Talked about this on Sunday because he knew, you know, what was going to be happening. And McIlroy said, I think it should have happened this meeting months ago, so I'm glad that it's happening. Hopefully that progresses conversations and gets us closer to a solution. Gets asked a couple of follow-ups. He says, I think I've said this before. I've spent time with Yasser Al-Rumayyan. And he has. He said he met with him in Dubai in 2022, or you know, late 2022, to talk about what Al-Rumayyan's interested in. And then that kind of all got shelved. Like McIlroy talked about the conversation on the tour, and then they didn't do anything with it until Jimmy Dunn started doing the outreach. And he spent time with the guy. So he says, the people that have represented him in LIV, I think have done him a disservice. So Norman and those guys. I see the two entities. I think there's a big, really big disconnect between PIF and LIV. I think you got PIF over here and LIV are sort of over here doing their own thing. So the closer that we can get to Yasser, PIF, and hopefully finalize that investment, I think that will be a really good thing. And then the follow-up question was, what does PIF want? Do you think that's different from LIV? McIlroy said, look, they're a sovereign wealth fund. They want to park money for decades and not worry about it. They want to invest in smart and secure businesses, and the PGA Tour is definitely one of those, especially if they're looking to invest in sport in some way. Now, I can argue that the whole process of LIV existing has proven that the PGA Tour doesn't have the best business model. They just had borderline monopoly, and now they don't, and that has caused chaos. So if I were assessing businesses to invest in, this is not the most secure business. It's just not. There's media rights deals. There's heavy reliance on sponsorship. It doesn't matter how much money you throw at it if you're the Saudis. If you want a return, then sponsorship matters. Attendance matters. TV viewership matters. Player development matters. Rights matter. Media rights, likeness rights, licensing. There's lots. There's a lot that goes on here. And they're very variable because you're at the mercy of who wins. You're at the mercy of creating stars and people that care in fans. So I would disagree with McRoy on that point. But I understand what he is trying to say. And I'm never going to be on that side. I'm never going to be on McRoy's side of, well, we should just make a deal with the Saudis. He has changed his mind about this, sort of publicly, but he has also said, going back quite a while, that if the Saudis want to get involved, they should get involved in the current ecosystem, not try to build their own. So he has indicated this for quite some time, that he is more on this side of the final solution being the PIF invests in the PGA Tour. But if he keeps saying, you know, I think LIV does a bad job of representing the public investment fund and its interests, that's fine. I think I agree with that piece of it. I don't think the LIV product it's not catching eyeballs. It's just not enough for the amount of money that they've thrown at it. To have effectively commercial-free golf on television and tournaments around the world and lots of money, and bought very name-recognizable players, and yet still you get no more than 200,000 people, you know, most times on the CW to watch it. That's just not, I mean, those are SpongeBob SquarePants rerun numbers. So from a buy-in perspective, I think McRoy's got it right. The LIV product does not very well represent what the PIF wants, I think. If I'm trying to read between the lines here, what McRoy believes is the PIF wants they didn't want to start LIV. Or maybe they did want to start LIV. They just thought they could do it themselves. They thought they could take this idea, throw the money at it, and make it happen. And they've realized, wait, that's not it. This isn't it. You can go keep buying players, and the data has shown that unless there's some weather calamity, the people aren't just going to tune in inherently, because the team concept doesn't really make any sense. And the individual golf is between 10 players. And, I mean, a 10-player tournament can be fun, but... okay. So I think what comes out of today is almost certainly not going to be a final agreement. It's going to be a listening session. And depending on how you think it should go, it's probably going to be players asking questions of Al Ramayan and trying to get a sense of what he wants, what he wants to protect of LIV, what he thinks can happen by creating some form of a team golf series on the PGA Tour schedule, or having a LIV golf series that integrates into the PGA Tour. Does that look like what currently exists? Does that mean all contracted players can stay on LIV and you have these 13 teams and most of the players are not really important to the overall interest of the public has in the product? Or does that mean all 50 players, the top 50 players get in, and if they want to participate, they're going to be on teams? Do the teams change from year to year? Who owns the teams? I don't foresee a very easy conversation about, like, for example, John Rahm or Dustin Johnson, the captains who quote unquote own the franchise or parts of the franchise, because the Saudis own most of it. They own 75% of it, right? They haven't sold off any of that to anybody because there's no point. So what do you value that? How do you convert the ownership of those teams? Do they stay owned by these players in those 25%? Can PGA Tour players get a piece of it? I mean, there's going to be a lot of questions like that, like minutia questions, because it seems pretty clear that the PGA Tour players have not gotten a lot of information from Monahan and Ed Herlihy and Jimmy Dunn about the negotiation. They don't know a ton. So they have been encouraged to meet with this guy. And I, again, do not understand how this has not happened sooner, because if this thing has been dragging and they want to consummate it, why wouldn't you have not taken this step sooner? So we'll see. It doesn't feel so much about a getting over the line meeting as a let's start running faster meeting. And to that end, I don't think there's going to be a deal before the Masters. That's 3 weeks away, basically. 3.5 weeks away. I don't think there could be a deal probably before the U.S. Open, if you made me guess. Again, just trying to throw out random dates in golf that matter. But we'll see. It does feel like there's a reason. If Monahan kind of called this, and I'm guessing that he did, or someone from Strategic Sports Group did it. And that would be interesting to know, too. Who's calling the shots here? Who called this meeting? Did John Henry in Strategic Sports Group? Did Monahan? Fenway Sports and SSG went over to Saudi Arabia to meet with Al Ramayan. So who's kind of leading that? Because Strategic Sports Group, Fenway Sports Group, does have a relationship with the Saudis to a degree. So who made this happen? And why? Like, maybe we'll get a sense of that. Maybe we won't. But I'm sure there will be some word that leaks out from it. And we'll talk about it later this week. This week on the tours, we've got the Valspar Championship, the Singapore Classic on the DP World Tour. The LPGA is in the Los Angeles area for the Fir Hills Sayre Park Championship. So, pretty decent slate this week. We'll talk about that as well. And should be a good one. Get a hold of me, Ryan, at thegolfnewsnet.com. I'm on Twitter, Threads, X, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Ryan Ballingy Golf. I'm on Facebook and YouTube at that handle, and Ryan Ballingy everywhere else. Golf News Net's on all of those services at Golf News Net. Back tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Two Off the First.